Okay, I think we'll get started and allow Commissioner Saltzman to catch up to us. So, council come to order. Would you call the roll, please, Carla?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Item 512, please.
Accept the Chief Administrative Officer Second Annual Report on the General Obligation Bond Independent Citizen Committee.
Jack, come on up. Bring your team. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Jack Graham, Chief Administrative Officer. I'm joined today by two of the members of the Citizen Public Safety General Obligation Bond Independent Committee. I have with me Kurt Hall, who is the chair of the committee, and Nicholas Johnson, a member of the committee. We are pleased to present the second annual Public Safety General Obligation Bond Report to Council for your acceptance. City Council established the Independent Citizen Committee in compliance with the voter-approved bond measure. The five-member committee provides transparency and accountability to taxpayers regarding geobond proceeds and to ensure expenditures meet voters' intent. There are four projects funded by the $72.4 million general obligation bond, of which the committee has provided quarterly updates to me, the CAO, and annual reports to the City Council. This annual report to Council is designed to provide a brief update on both the status of the General Obligation Bond Fund and the four public safety projects for the period ending December 2012. The committee members have expressed a desire to lead this presentation and update Council regarding their assessment of the General Obligation Bond Fund and the four projects. I will now turn it over to the Chair, Kurt Hall, and committee member Nicola Johnston to give you their assessment of the geobond fund and also the four projects. And at the end of their presentation, if you have any questions for us, we can ask those questions.
All right. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Mayor and members of the City Council. I'm Kirk Hall, Chair of the Independent Citizen Committee. As the CAO has just mentioned, this was set up as part of the bond vote in 2010 for these particular four projects. It's a five-member council. Three of the members could not be here today, but the two most important members were able to come today. As was mentioned, the bond authorized up to $72.4 million for four specific projects, and it specifically created this ICC to provide quarterly review on the progress of the projects. You have the report. We know you have a lot to do, so we're going to try to keep this brief, and the good news is it's a good report, a favorable report for all the projects. The four projects are fire apparatus replacement. Now, I'm going to tell you what the current budget's amount. These four projects have been supplemented with funds from other sources, so they will actually add up to more than $72.4 million, but they were integrated into other planning that departments were doing. And so the fire apparatus replacement project will cost about $20.5 million. It's got a scheduled completion date of December 2016. Fire Station 21, that's on the east bank of the Willamette, just north of the Hawthorne Bridge, has a cost of $11.5 million, scheduled completion date September 2014. The Public Safety Emergency Radio System Replacement Project is the biggest. It's got a cost of $52 million, scheduled completion date October 2015. And the Emergency Coordination Center, that's in southeast Portland near Mount Scott, total cost of about $4 million. Its scheduled completion date is this coming January. We have an overall assessment in the report at page 6. I'm going to read this quickly into the record because this is the most important reason why this committee exists. As previously noted, the ICC held quarterly public meetings with city staff responsible for each project funded by the Public Safety Geo Bond to review the progress of each project. In addition, each project received guidance and input from project oversight subcommittees. The members of the ICC found the information provided by city staff to be comprehensive, timely, and informative on all occasions. Staff members have been responsive to our questions and have supplemented their regular presentations with additional information on request. ICC members also provided city staff with various ideas and suggestions concerning the projects along the way, to which the city staff were always responsive. The relationship between the ICC and the city staff has been collaborative and productive. The ICC does not provide either a financial or performance auditing function and can only proceed with the information presented to it at its quarterly meetings. With this observation, ICC members believe they've been kept fully informed by city staff and are satisfied with the quality and presentation of information regarding the projects. Based on the information presented to us, it appears that the projects funded by the public safety GO bond are consistent with the voter-approved purposes of the bond and that expenditures to date have also been appropriate. It also appears that execution of the projects to date have been professional and appropriate and were designed to meet the purposes of the bond in an economical fashion. It appears to the ICC that the projects are generally on track to meet their projected budgets and timelines. Overall, we've been impressed with the focus and professionalism of city staff responsible for executing these projects, and we appreciate the courtesy and responsiveness that they've shown us. On the report you got, if you want to see a status of budget and expenditures to date, that's at pages 3 and 4. Nikki Johnston is going to present a brief update of the following two projects. I'll mention she's also serving on the individual project oversight committees for these two projects: fire apparatus replacement, which is page 7 of your report, and fire station 21, which is page 8. Nikki.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. For the record, my name is Nicolette Johnston. We'll start with the fire bureau apparatus. The original goal was 29 apparatus, of which 6 have been delivered: a ladder truck, a heavy rescue squad, and 4 rapid response vehicles. There were 3 significant issues that impacted this goal. The first one was writing specifications tightly enough for each apparatus so that vendors can respond thoughtfully to the request for proposal, that is, all of the pieces, the cost, bottom line number. The limited number of vendors these days who manufacture fire apparatus, so you don't get a whole big world to choose from. You do just have a few. The increasing materials cost over the time period of actual purchase, so even though the specs may be written, it may take up to a year or two before delivery, and in that time, there can be quite a bit of change in metal costs and so forth. There was one significant issue that presented an opportunity, and it's the timing for the Bureau to become more agile, both in types of apparatus acquisition and how to become more nimble in its delivery of services to its customers, basically medical and fire responses. They have been dutifully analyzing their call volume, their call type, their distance, et cetera, in order to see what they can do to mitigate the expenses to the taxpayer and also to deliver more quickly. I want to note 2 things that are coming up that are a little bit different than we expected. 2 fireboats have been ordered from Oregon Iron Works. I personally was somewhat concerned that they were the only vendor who responded to the request for proposal, because the company has had some difficulty delivering other products timely enough. And I have to say, our dear harbor master, Tim Van Sigum, has been on their site 3 to 4 times a week to ensure a timely response, accurate to the specifications, and they have provided, because of it, I believe, a wonderful documentation of how each pieces are going on to these fireboats. And I hope that whoever is the fire commissioner remembers to ask for this document. It is absolutely wonderful. It's in color, too. That makes it a lot of fun. Valuable work, I believe, has been performed by Chief Logistics Chief Glenn Eisner and Deputy Chief Mario Benetti. Their steady attention to the vehicle specifications is greatly appreciated, because the additional items can add up quite quickly when they are going to buy these products. I also wanted to note that Chief Jansen has been responding much differently than I have seen in the previous 4 chiefs. I worked on the budget for the Fire Bureau for 4 chiefs previously. And her response has been, how can we deliver this more quickly, more efficiently, and less costly? And I personally really appreciated that when I was listening in on the conversations, what was going on. So that is a brief overview for the fire apparatus. So going on to Station 21, the original goal was to replace the existing structure with a new seismic upgrade building and a dock supporting a boathouse. 4 significant issues impacted this goal. First, there were a large number of permits because it's over water, so you can just imagine what went on. A temporary structure required to house fire responders while the current structure is demolished and the new structure is completed. The need to transfer the Madison Street dock to the Bureau. Cost of the boathouse inadvertently was missed when developing figures for the bond measure. But three significant things presented opportunity. I'll say four, maybe. There is the sale of two pieces of real estate, the transfer of the Madison Street dock from the PDC to the Bureau for no charge, a FEMA port security grant for $800,000, and a $1.5 million remaining from the 1998 GO bond. Connie Johnson is from OMF is the project manager, and I must say she has done a remarkable job keeping this thing steady, especially during the permitting process. The pilings went in well, things got taken care of, and it was really wonderful. So you can, I can say, whoever is going to get OMF for the Bureau, you're going to love Connie Johnson. So that's my quick report to you all.
Thank you.
Why don't we pause? Do you have any questions for Nikki on either of these two projects?
Your excellent written report, too. You had read, Mr. Chair, something earlier, which I want to use as a prompter for a question, because we're here as referees. We want to make sure you're getting what you need to do your job, and then we welcome your report. You said that the committee does not provide, the ICC does not provide either a financial or performance auditing function and can only proceed with the information presented to it at its quarterly meeting. So I guess that begs the question, although you allude to it in the answer. Are you getting all the information you need, and have there been any instances where you have been thwarted in getting information you need to discharge your job?
And it's a good question, and we are getting – I put that caveat in last year's report because I didn't want someone – if something does go wrong and it has to do with a financial thing that we have no control over and no information about, I don't want someone to say, well, why didn't you see this? But, you know, I've been on enough committees and done enough other things that I can tell when – people are just presenting happy talk and not telling you the things they don't want you to know, and I can also tell when people are changing this. We ask a lot of hard questions in these meetings. Did you think about this? What about that? Does this really make sense? And through it all, both the materials we get in advance of the meetings and the responses at the meetings and the follow-up to our requests at the meetings, I feel like the bureaus are being open and giving us information and not just giving us happy talk. So as far as I can tell, we're getting everything, and we've always gotten the follow-up that we request when we do request some follow-up.
Thank you very much. By the way, if there is a problem, by tradition, we blame the newest member of the council.
I understand.
Commissioner Novick, welcome.
So I'm very impressed with your report, and thank you for your diligence, and I'm thinking we rely a lot on our citizen volunteers, and particularly for oversight of something like this where we're spending taxpayers' money. Could you just tell the viewers at home what else you do in your lives or what else you have done in your lives as to why you're qualified to be on this committee?
Well, certainly to begin, I hate to say this, but I was a planning commissioner for the city of Beaverton for a number of years during the time where we were rezoning most of South Beaverton. And I can tell you that the meeting started at 7:30 in the evening and ended at 2:30 in the morning or later. So it was quite a trial by fire. We got sued by the developers because we were inhibiting their making money, and it was just a wonderful thing to go through. But it was interesting to see how the citizens there responded to that terrific zoning change, because it was a lot. I also sat on the Fire and Police Pension and Disability Board, and that was my first real look into pension funds and how they're treated, and also how disabilities are treated in the city. It was really wonderful, and you may remember it was then we all resigned, so it went into a different methodology of going. I work in my neighborhood, Irvington. I am a real believer in the historic district, and I'm sure, Amanda, you must have heard from us a number of times by now over the historic district code. I also sit on land use, and I was the citizen on the Council for Court Procedures for the State of Oregon, appointed by the chief there, and that was also one of the most wonderful experiences I've ever had. So I have to say I've had the most fun as a citizen in all these committees of anybody. But I do pick and choose.
That's a very varied set of experiences, which I'm sure you're bringing to this project, and it goes to folks at home that if you're intelligent and willing to volunteer a lot of hours, we don't usually ask you to stay until 2:30 in the morning for this particular committee, I would think, but thank you very much for all you do.
Well, thanks.
At some point, I'd love to sit down with you and have with a map of Beaverton and have you explain which parts were planned during prime time and which parts were planned at 1 in the morning.
Well, we had a little problem at one point where we were there were four of us sitting in a lounge having coffee, honest to God, and we were accused of having a meeting. So we then only could only meet in a public place one or two at a time. You know how it goes.
We know.
You do.
And what's your background?
Well, my background is I'm a recovering lawyer, worked for a big firm here for a while, and then ran an insurance company, done some private equity stuff. I'm doing some investment management and technology things today. So varied background, but I did work as chief counsel for a House Judiciary Committee in Salem back in the 80s for one session, and have been on lots of boards and committees. So I enjoy this, especially when the committee is actually used for something, and I think this committee serves a useful purpose. It was a way of reassuring the citizens in 2010 when this bond was approved that it would have an independent group looking at these projects and their progress and reporting back. So I think it's an important way to maintain trust with the community.
Thank you for your service.
Sure. Thanks very much.
Two more. I have two more projects.
Go ahead.
Okay. The and Nikki basically is awesome. She puts in way more time than most people I know. But I can tell you for these other two projects, public safety emergency radio system replacement, this is the biggest project, $52 million. They've spent $7.4 million so far. And again, scheduled completion date is October 2015. When we held our first meeting, with the memory of Owen in mind, the state's attempt to create interoperability statewide on communication systems, and that was not a happy experience. And so the poor city staff members working on this, every single meeting I start out with interoperability and have you thought about it? Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? And they're sick of hearing about it. But the good news is that every time I ask them, they keep giving me more details about what they've done to make sure of that. And I feel very good at this stage that that they've handled this in a very logical, very good way. I will tell you that the city's existing emergency radio system equipment and transmitters and so forth were pretty much on their last legs. For some of the radios and parts, they can't get replacement parts anymore. So it was time definitely to make the investment or make the switch. As I mentioned, interoperability has always been a key. Portland's kind of taking a lead in the region on this because we're one of the biggest players. And your staff members are actually bringing in and letting the other jurisdictions participate, cities, counties, state, to increase interoperability and to make sure that everybody can talk to each other in an emergency. I think that some of these other local jurisdictions are kind of piggybacking on these efforts, too, and will probably follow the research and recommendations of what Portland is doing as they move forward on modernizing their equipment. One of the first steps the staff did was they hired a consultant, Federal Engineering Inc., came up with six deliverables that vendors and the project was supposed to achieve. This included reviews of towers and sites, plus also all the equipment for communication. They came up with a comprehensive, let me tell you also, there are federal standards, and this project is paying attention to the federal standards as well, so there is some help since 9/11 from the federal government helping all jurisdictions figure out these issues of equipment and interoperability. An RFP was created November of 2012. Six potential vendors responded. Along the way, I mentioned there's been involvement by all the city, county, and other jurisdictions who may tag along in the future. It appears we're on schedule and within scope. This is very complex, and if you want more details, we'd probably call somebody up from the appropriate bureau. But our report does discuss at page 10 some potential risks. We did ask, I know each project was doing this anyway, but we asked them to identify for us and report at each meeting potential risks and problems that could go wrong in the future and how they were dealing with it. Some of them are color-coded. Green means everything's going well. Yellow means that we got something to worry about. Red, if we got it, would mean we have a problem. And I think I've been very impressed with the information we've gotten and the foresight of these the bureaus and looking ahead at what the risks could be. So there are potential risks discussed at page 10. I don't think any of them currently seem likely, and as far as I can tell on all these projects, none of these projects seem to be actually at risk of not non-completion or of going over budget. The last project is the Emergency Coordination Center. It's page 12 of your report. This is a $4 million cost. $3 million has been spent to date. It's a lot of the work's been done already, but it's scheduled for final completion of January 2014. Construction contract was let March of 2012. It went to Emmerich Construction. It should the construction at the end of 2012, 38% complete. I think it's quite a bit further than that now, including a new 150-foot communication tower. The facility's on track for LEED Gold certification. There have been 17 change order requests for about $121,000. There are others pending, but it's all within the standard construction for contingency amounts. And I feel really good that the Bureau is managing these change orders and which ones are valid and which ones are not, managing them very well. There was identified earlier on, the main risk was potential interference with a major Water Bureau project at Powell and 100 and I-205 that might have meant too many trucks coming and going and interfering. The good news is the water project was delayed a bit, and I think most of the traffic for the ECC site has happened by now, so I think that's not going to turn out to be a problem. And again, as Nikki said, I've been very favorably impressed with the professionalism and intelligence and reports of the city staff on these two projects. So that's all I have for those projects, and I think that's our annual report to the council.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions?
So this could either be for the committee members or for Jack. I think in your report you note that, and I noticed on the table, there's no contingency funds remaining, and all interest earnings are anticipated to be spent. I'm not an expert in this stuff, but that sounds like it's pushing things pretty close to the margin. I guess I'm just interested in an opinion or reaction on that.
I think I know the. I don't know why it shows zero, but I know that each project has a contingency fund in it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know.
I think that all of the funds for the geobond has been allocated into each one of the projects. I do know for a fact that under the PSSRP, each one of the projects in PSRP has its own contingency within those projects. And if any point in which contingency is not used, it goes back, rolled back up into a program contingency for the whole program. And then if another program or project is under, then that it is used. So each one of the projects have their own contingencies within their budget.
And I think each project had other funding. So I'm guessing the contingency fund for each project, they probably said, we know we're going to spend the geo bond proceeds. Now let's put in these other funds, these other enhancements, and I think that's where they have the money for contingencies on each of these projects.
And what we can do,
if you could follow up with us.
We'll clarify that, because the additional resources that was brought in, especially like with Fire Station 21, there was, I think there was almost like a total of like almost $4 million of other resources that was brought in. So what we'll do is give you a follow-up on where those resources are at and how they align up with the contingencies with each one of those projects.
And then my second question really was for Nikki. You mentioned, this council is well aware of some problems with deliverables with Oregon Ironworks, and we had some concerns about this with the boats in particular. And so I guess that you mentioned the Harbor Master is visiting two or three times a week, and you have a nice color report there. I didn't catch whether you said that leads us to conclude we're comfortable that Oregon Ironworks is going to deliver on schedule.
Well, actually, I am so comfortable that it's my understanding one fire will be delivered in August, a few months from now, of this year, which is an early delivery of one.
Okay.
In fact, that there should be a correction of page 7 of 16 where it says upcoming milestones. One fireboat is on scheduled delivery in August of 2014. That should be 2013.
Oh, okay.
So I do believe Harbor Master Van Sigum is really the reason they're delivering early, because he is on top of that. And for a lot of reasons, he doesn't want it to go bad under his jurisdiction.
Nobody wants it to go bad.
No. And, of course, he's really anxious to get them in the water so they can test everything out and feel very good about the what they're doing. There will be one of the fire boats that's currently in the here will be, I think, they're going to use for something else. We'll have to ask the chief what they're going to do with it. But I feel much better about Oregon Iron Works than I did at the beginning, because I kept thinking, there was no other vendor.
Right.
No other vendor. Yeah, so what do you do? You just take the risk, I guess.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thank you both for your service, too.
Thank you.
They have built boats before. They just haven't built streetcars before.
Yeah. Okay. That's true.
Wait here for the vote.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you both. Thank you very much.
Chair, I move to adopt, accept the report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Anyone here to testify on this item?
No one signed up.
All right. Then a roll call, please.
Fish?
Mr. Hall and Ms. Johnson, thank you for joining us today. And Jack, for being here. And thank you for a very thorough and professional report. And we very much appreciate your service. Aye.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for your time and service, as I said, and we appreciate the diligence you're bringing to oversight of and being good fiscal stewards, making sure we're good fiscal stewards of the voter-approved general obligation bond money for very critical elements of our public safety system. So thank you. Aye.
Novick.
Thank you for your service and for your exceptionally clear and well-written written report and for your very clear and helpful presentation today. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for all the time that you spend on this committee, including coming to talk with us today. It's really important for citizens to know that there are other independent citizens watching over how these monies are spent. And thanks also to Chief Jansen for your leadership of the Fire Bureau and for everybody else who's been involved, as well as CAO Jack Graham. Aye.
Hales.
And my wife runs a program at Portland State where people come here from other cities and often even other countries to study Portland and how we do planning and sustainability and transportation and those issues. And some of these delegations are here longer than others. And it's been the case a couple of times that they've been here long enough and we've gotten comfortable enough in conversations that eventually, you know, a member of one of those delegations will gingerly ask the question, in so many words, how do you deal with corruption? Because it's a problem for us in advancing our city. And I have to explain to them that there's such a deep and reliable tradition of good government here and of honest and effective public administration that it's almost never an issue. And one reason it's almost never an issue is, you know, the competence and integrity of the people that work for us. But the other is that we've got citizens that pay attention and invest time like this. And not only do we not have to worry about corruption, but we more often than not are bringing things in on time, on budget, or better than that because of, you know, effective administration and good oversight. So we take these things for granted, or we shouldn't, and I'm glad you don't, because you've invested a lot of time to make sure that we get to the result that we think is normal. So thank you so much for your service and for the very good results that we're getting from this program. Aye. Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to item 513.
Extend a street closure pilot program in the Old Town Entertainment Districts through parts of Northwest 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Avenues between West Burnside and Northwest Everett on certain days and during certain hours.
So following council's hearing on this last week, we made some revisions to the draft ordinance and have brought back a substitute that I think incorporates what the council was looking for, particularly the addition of an objective of improving noise enforcement and other measures to improve neighborhood livability. But Chad Stover from my staff and Paul Van Orden, our noise officer, are here to answer any further questions that the council has before we take this up.
So, Mayor, this is a second first reading, correct, Chad?
This is a second first reading.
First reading.
It will come back for second reading.
Chad, could you come forward for a second? I want to just get clarification on one of the issues that came up in our last hearing, which was we had a number of people testify that they wanted us to come back sooner rather than later to evaluate the program. And how did you come? How did you guys come down on that?
Yes, sir. I appreciate the question. So I think the value of this extended program going through the summer months is that unlike the original pilot program, which started off in December and ended in the beginning of April, is that we didn't have a chance to really see the effects of a street closure during the peak months of when we see the highest volumes of traffic on a Friday and Saturday night in the entertainment district. And so we took that into consideration when we thought about extending it through the end of October, because we found historically that we see higher volumes of people in those areas in the months of July and August in particular. And this would be a good chance to see the effects of when we have four times as many people inside the square as we have in the first 3 months in the original pilot.
Yeah, the other thing I'd add is that the intent of this extension is in part to start trying out some things, like perhaps having food vendors operating on the street in the middle of the night, and it's going to take some time to get that up to speed. It's going to take some time to find the nonprofit that's willing to continue operating this festival, if you will, on an ongoing basis, if that's what the council decides after this extension. So some of the to-do list items that we've built into the ordinance will take more than 30 or 60 days to implement, and so giving us long enough to make it not just an extension but an enhancement of what's been accomplished already is, I think, pretty important.
Thank you. And the second, I guess, question I had is, there seemed to be a sense of urgency from some of the people testified about improving the aesthetic appearance of the barricades and the street closure stuff. Is it, now I see that it's listed in there 4C as this may include but is not limited to. Can we get some assurance that that's an issue that will be addressed at the front end? Because it seemed like people had some ideas about how to just change the look of the barricades, make it look less like a DMZ.
Yes, sir. Yeah, thank you for that question. One of the things throughout our three town hall meetings, as well as the two midnight to 3 a.m. walkabouts that the mayor participated in the Old Town area, is that we had a lot of back and forth dialogue about how people felt about the street closure itself. And with this concern that they don't like the general appearance of the way it is right now, and that they said, quote-unquote, things like, it kind of looks like a crime scene or it looks like a construction site, because at the onset of the original pilot, we just used our standard barricades under the assumption that this was a finite program that was going to last for 3 months and it would come to an end and we would gather data and see where we stood at that point in time. So one of the things that we've talked about with bar owners, business owners, social service providers, and other stakeholders in the area is that during this extended program of 6 months to the end of October, as we experiment with some of these bullets that are highlighted in the ordinance, is that if this were to ever become a permanent thing where everybody was on board and they wanted to move forward with this, is that one of the things we want to do is make sure that it doesn't look like a crime scene, that doesn't look like a construction site.
I appreciate that. And I know other cities that are converting public spaces to non-vehicular uses are successfully using things like planters.
Yes.
And other things that don't, and I think, frankly, it actually does make a difference to your pedestrian experience if it's a row of planters or something that is benign. Yes. Rather than a, so I would hope that's something we could work on at the front end, and I'm more comfortable with the longer timeline to collect data if we do some of the things that they identified at the front end.
Yeah, I'd like to do that ASAP. I think that one, even if it's just a trial run of the new look, even if it's just Corex signs, you know, snap tied to the crowd control barriers rather than the roadway barriers, to try out the look and say something different. You know, the sooner we can try some of that out, relatively inexpensively, the better.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So what's the proposed structure for making decisions about who the nonprofit is? We had a lot of testimony from Annette Campbell and others, local business owners and residents, concerned even about extending this. Who gets to participate in deciding what happens?
Thank you for the question. I believe this is a discussion that we will have with the mayor's office, and we will continue to bring everybody to the table as best as we can. I will say that in the last 2 months since this came to my attention, that was always our intent. We wanted to reach out to as many stakeholders as we possibly can and make sure that everybody is engaged in that process and make sure that their input is taken into consideration.
Well, I appreciate the number of public meetings that there have been, but there isn't a designated balanced group of folks who are charged with helping to make decisions.
Right.
So I would encourage you to convene that group as soon as possible.
Yes. Frankly, I don't think we're going to have a competition among nonprofits to take on this difficult job. We'll be lucky if we can tackle one and say, will you do this under these conditions? But then to augment that with some kind of balanced stakeholder committee that brings those multiple interests to bear on guiding the thing. Because you're right. I mean, there's a variety of points of view about this whole experiment and different interests. The interests of the people that live in the district are different than the bar owners, to put it mildly. So, you know, we're going to have some kind of advisory structure to whoever's running the thing, like the Pioneer Courthouse Square Board is to Pioneer Courthouse Square, Inc., the nonprofit. That's the notion that we're operating on, that there will be a nonprofit, and it will, like Pioneer Courthouse Square Board or the Mississippi Avenue Street Festival, have a variety of folks that have an interest in the success of the thing helping to govern its operation.
So is your intent to have the decision about who manages it come back to council?
It probably has to. I think we'll probably have to come back to council. Yes. That's certainly my intent to bring it back to council. Again, I'm not sure how long it's going to take to find that entity or, at worst, have one created for this express purpose.
I think we've already had a couple of entities suggested. So, you know, in terms of the steps of getting the advisory committee together, I think that would be very helpful as soon as possible, because it's fine to invite people to come to public hearings and public meetings, but unless there's a group who feel it's their responsibility as well as their privilege to help make the decisions, I think things don't go as well. And then I'm also wondering about the cost. It says in the financial impact statement that PBOT will be charged a total of $170 per weekend for parking and towing enforcement, and that the police bureau will be providing at most one sergeant and four officers for a total of $1,831.10 per weekend. That doesn't sound like very much money for either of those two things. Is that's really all it costs?
The cost that changed in that was from the perspective of Portland Bureau of Transportation. Originally, they were handling the street closure, and they were being charged, and this isn't exact, but approximately $1,500 per weekend. And so they'll be overseeing the tows portion, and that's where the $170 per weekend number comes in. In terms of the police costs, this is cost neutral. We had the four officers and the sergeant there assigned previously, and so that will stay the same.
Yeah, and of course, one of the items under item C is the development of ongoing sources of revenue. So the intent is to have those revenue sources made real and to start paying those costs and then some, to give the entity the chance to pay for signage and improve the whole thing. But those include things like realizing more revenue out of the NATO and Davis garage, but perhaps charging fees for the use of the street surface for after-hours dining. So there are a number of options for how we can collect revenue, and the intent is to start substituting those locally generated revenue sources for whatever subsidy the city's been providing through either PBOT or the police bureau. Frankly, fully recovering the cost of the police detail that's out there every weekend is probably a stretch, but even if we partially recover it, that'll be a big improvement.
Mm-hmm. And what about parking for nearby residents that currently park on the street? Do we have any thoughts of how we're going to make it so that they're not paying an arm and a leg to park?
Well, we're going to have to figure that out. If we start charging for on-street parking, where it's now free after 7 p.m., then accommodating the residents that have cars is going to have to be a piece of that picture. We haven't crossed the threshold saying we are definitely going to start charging for on-street parking. It's one of the options. But you're right. We've got people that live there who have cars and who now have structured their life around being able to drive back to the neighborhood, park after 7 o'clock, and get the car out in the morning. We don't want to mess that up.
Mm-hmm. So there might be some consideration.
So there
of a
might
parking
have to
permit
be
district.
Resident permits, yeah. That would go along with an on-street scheme if we move that way.
And I think that particular issue might be a step two or a step three issue that we tackle as we move forward. As for right now and more immediately, one of the issues around parking with the way that it is currently with the street closure is that we've heard some complaints about the education and the signage in the area. It's complicated because the meters stop at 7 p.m. and then from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's essentially a free-for-all where anybody can come in and park, but then, oh, by the way, at 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday nights, it closes down again because of the street closure. And so what are some better ways that we could message this out to the public so they're not confused by this, so that that will prevent the number of people who have been getting towed as a result of not understanding that signage and that education piece?
And just my final question, we didn't put anything in the budget for establishing the nonprofit. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're
yes,
not expecting to have to spend city money to create the nonprofit.
But then we heard from some of the business owners that they don't feel it's been profitable for them to do this.
We have heard that. We also, you and I, saw the queue of restaurants and bars that were over at their fire marshal capacity and couldn't let anybody else in the door.
Which, so, to be fair, I had nothing to compare it with as to whether that was the same way it was before.
But it seems to me that between improving the prosperity of the businesses in the district and the money we're leaving on the table by not charging for parking, not charging for in-street dining, not fully utilizing the NATO and Davis garage, that we have a number of ways that we could recoup the costs of this thing as long as it's, for most people, a success. Okay. We will not have everyone on board, I'm sure, with something this complex with this many stakeholders. But I think there's a pretty good chance we'll have a working majority of people that have a stake in this neighborhood that say not only is this better than the Wild West that we had before the street closure, but that the more permanent scheme is sustainable and you know, more successful for the neighborhood than the temporary innovation that we've been continuing one after another.
And Mayor, if I can just reiterate and perhaps clarify some of the testimony we heard last week from the panel and from some of the folks who came in and testified, is that this ordinance is essentially saying we want to extend the street closure for another 6 months. And we, in addition to the testimony that we heard from different stakeholders in the area, some for it, some against it, we also have statistics from the Portland Police Bureau during that three-month period that shows a 30% reduction in the crimes that have been existing in that area prior to the street closure, which leads us to believe that that part at least has been successful, and that with this particular group, and when I say group, I mean all the stakeholders involved, is one of the things that they've mentioned to me in our discussions is that, yes, they are interested in at least experimenting with some new ideas to help enhance the livability of the overall area. Some of these might be what they are, some of them might not be, but this will be a chance for us to try and explore with those and see where we want to go, while at the same time including everybody in those discussions.
More questions for Chad? Or?
Well, I apologize I wasn't here last week, but in the discussion about perhaps charging for parking after 7 p.m., I mean, I think it's very important that we not only think about the needs of residents, but realize that a lot of people who work in these bars and restaurants rely on, you know, city free parking after 7 o'clock. And so I just want that to be, you know, a part of this process too. Mm-hmm. I don't know to what extent the stakeholders include the employees of the bars and taverns and restaurants.
Good point.
Yes.
Good point.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for Chad? And is there anyone signed up to testify today?
Was a substitute.
Yeah, so we didn't have anyone today. Of course, we had a large number. So this will come back for second reading next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we need to make a motion to move the substitute.
Motion for the substitute. Is there a second? Okay. Roll call on replacing it with the substitute.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Good. Thank you. Thanks, Chad. Okay. We have one more item, 514.
Amend contract with Moore Isofano Goldsman, Inc., PC, to increase contract amount by an additional $409,704 to provide additional consultant services for redevelopment of the ADA Title II transition plan for the city.
Bob, there were some questions about this. Did you have a chance to answer the council questions?
We provided information to each council member. Happy to answer any further questions you may have.
Okay. Any further questions for OMF about this? Good. I guess you answered them. Thank you. Second reading, roll call, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you. I appreciate you and Shoshana answering the questions in between the first and second first readings. Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And we're adjourned. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think we can get clean and safe to do this. I think we can. Yeah, either one would be fine. I mean, it seems like it's right to fall squarely in clean and safe's competency
right.
And what they're actually supposed to be doing. And, you know, I'm prepared to put a squeeze on them a little bit and say, come on.
Yeah.
This is what you do. So.